Night gathers, and now our podcast begins. It shall not end until we're done talking. We are
the princes that were promised.
Welcome to the princes that were promised. It's me, it's Shawnee Wan, and joining me, as always, the warden of Nassau County, the supreme leader of all spoilers, and an expert on today's topic, it's John. John, how psyched are you to finally get to devote time to this particular character?
John, the whole entire episode is going to be really bad.
You've been dreading it, haven't you?
Dude, I get killed so many times from all of the Sansa lovers out there. And a lot of them, what I've noticed, at least the arguments they get with me, I mean, I get killed by these people. I get killed. Like, they cannot divide fictional character from reality.
Okay, I think I know what you mean. Can you be a little more specific?
Just take things with her so serious. Like, you bear Sansa, it's like, oh, you hate female characters in books. You hate females. You're anti-women. I'm telling you, I've seen it all. It's just ridiculous.
All right. You know what? If we're going to do this, let's do it right.
Oh, no.
Let's just lean into the punch. With Sansa Stark in particular, I think I'm picking up what you're putting down. Sansa Stark, more so than Daenerys, than Arya, any other character. I guess it would have to be more about gender than it would have to be about race in Westeros. Yeah. But Sansa is, she's like that lightning rod character for, I don't want to say political correctness, but she is the representation.
I personally never got into any kind of going back and forth. Like, if I say a bad thing about Daenerys, it never comes into like, oh, you have a problem with female characters. Never get it. I see something bad about Sansa, all of a sudden it turns into this whole entire, you know, girl power.
You're a masochist.
Yes, I got called that once.
I mean, you know, everybody's entitled to their opinion, but why is it Sansa?
I don't, you know what? I'm going to say it right now so we all know what's going to be the biggest painful thing out of this. I know she's going to live through that. This
scale of 1 to 10.
9.5.
Okay. There is a
half percent, point. I'll call it a 9. Don't get, I won't go to the halves. I'll call it a 9 out of 10. She's going to live. There's one point of the deal that she'll die, but she's going to live. And out of that 9 out of 10, it's probably 50-50 that she's going to be some sort of like ruler queen of something at the end, which is really good. At this point, I'm fully believing that that's going to happen.
I am 100% in agreement with you to Sansa Stark's fate. She is not going to die, and she's going to rule at least the North when it's all said and done. I don't think she's going to rule all of Westeros, but of all the characters remaining, she's definitely in the top 5 of characters most likely to rule the realm. We're going to address where this anger at Sansa comes from, but I'm going to ask right off the bat, does some of it have to do with the Sansa fandom, the Jonsa shippers? These fans of Sansa who want to see Sansa and Jon married and together.
I still think there's a possibility that I think more than if she goes with anyone, it's going to be Gendry, I think, at this point. And maybe I'm skipping way, way ahead. Like I said a couple times, where does the Stark name go to after this? Like, how does it live on? The only way I can see it live on if somehow that there's like a Jon Sansa child, and they call that the Stark kid.
Well, okay, but knowing John, that would have to mean that he never finds out who he is, right?
No, he's going to find out. At this point, I really don't think it needs. It's less and less that's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
I thought more so like a couple of years ago. I thought that had at least there was a little more of a distinct possibility of it happening.
Of John, him being a Stark at the end.
You know, him being, you know, with, like doing something with Sansa. I was actually thinking maybe two wives. One with Daenerys and then one with Sansa, so you have like the fire and ice.
Yeah, you know Sansa wouldn't stand for that.
Yeah,
so I don't see the Jon Sansa marriage at the end, but it is a very popular theory. I don't think it's a question of does she live, does she die? Will she be a queen? supporting a king that rules the realm, or will she have her own regency, so to speak? Will she be a protector of an area or the protector of the realm in all at the end of this series? I don't think those are the big questions concerning Sansa. I think the biggest question concerning Sansa is how does the position of leadership, the position of power that she will have pretty much undoubtedly at the end of this series, how will that relate to the legacy, the lineage of House Stark moving forward? And I can't come up with an answer. I can't envision a way unless she's marrying Bran, that that's the case. And she's not going to marry Bran. That's, you know, it's silly to think that. Unless there's a secret Stark we don't know about.
Another baby swap.
Yeah.
Triple baby swap.
Maybe Benjen has an illegitimate bastard child. We will find out, and we'll find out pretty soon. In the meantime, we're going to talk about Sansa. John, is she the worst? Is she worse than Catelyn?
No. She's not. No.
Not so bad as that.
No.
Yeah, Catelyn's as bad as it gets.
You know what I was thinking about today? The something with Sansa. You first get introduced to these characters. You know, there's certain characters you don't really know what to expect for them. You don't know if you should like them or not like them. I know there are certain other characters that, you know, right away you have an opinion of. Like, you know, Jimmy Lannister right away. Oh, God. This guy threw a little kid out the window. Put him in a dirt bag. Cersei Lannister, you kind of knew right away that, you know, it's like she's definitely that someone you're going to enjoy or like. Eddard Stark's a character right away. You'd be like, all right, Sky Eddard. This is the guy right here, you know?
Mm-hmm.
There's just something about Sansa that right away that I just knew that I'm not going to like this character. The way she was, like, snotty.
Are you looking at this from the book perspective? I guess both. I mean, she's pretty accurate in her adaptation. Yeah, I don't think that there was something about her that I did not like at first.
No, dude, I caught it right away. Caught it.
Was it the comparison with Arya? Was it the way she treated Arya or the differences between the two characters?
I think, you know, definitely the way they showed Sansa right away and, like, Arya right off the bat was already shown as... this is going to be the more likable character. Like, right away, Sansa was just not a likable character. It just was not going to happen. And that's what makes me even worse, feeling even worse about her actually living and being in charge of some capacities, because she was written like this. She was written not to be liked. Even Sansa fans have to acknowledge that she was not a likable character, especially early on. She was not a likable character.
When you say not likable...
oh, Joffrey, I want to do everything for my Joffrey.
Right,
oh,
okay.
She's lying, you know, instead of being honest.
Well, I think she's lying to herself more so. We've talked about this plenty of times before about young Sansa and her admiration, her crush on Prince Joffrey Baratheon. It's an understandable thing with young girls, young boys too, when you have your first crush. Not really knowing who that person is. You're just a kid and you get your hormones. She's excited at the prospect of being queen. Joffrey's of similar age. What other kind of boys is she meeting at Winterfell in the north? And he's the crown prince. For me, I can go a ways to forgive some of her behavior early on. And I think the problem I have with Sansa, I think starts with the decisions she makes when things get very serious. When she starts making decisions that are very serious and affect everybody in her family and the realm as a whole, based on this crush. That's when I start to have problems with her. But early on, for me, I think it was more that her character was uninteresting, whereas Arya's was very interesting from the get-go. But at the same time, you needed that Sansa-type character. You had Catelyn showing us what a noble woman of Westeros is. But that perspective of Sansa, the young noble woman who's not married, who is coming into her own, it's an important voice in establishing this universe. I think for me, it's more that she's kind of boring, the things that she did. And then when she gets interesting, it's for all the wrong reasons. In season one, we meet Sansa. Her first scene is the stitching, right? With Septa Mordain and Arya. Has King Robert arrived by then? I'm trying to remember and...
No, I think that's 4.
That doesn't matter either way. I just can't picture it straight in my mind. When King Robert arrives, one of the first things he does after seeing Lyanna's crypt is suggest...
a marriage pact. He says, yeah, this is what's going to happen. You have a daughter, I got a son. We'll join houses.
Yeah, Robert's looking at this as he was going to marry Lyanna, and that was taken away from him. This is the next best thing, because Ned has always been more of a brother to him than his own brothers. So this is an exciting thing for him. It's an exciting prospect to carry on that friendship that he had with Ned and really make them a family through marriage. But Ned is not as excited at the idea as Robert.
Because Ned just hates King's Landing. He just hates King's Landing, I think. He knows damn well that the Lannisters are, you know, Robert's the king, yeah, but it's so filled with Lannister, it's the word I'm looking for, Lannister slawing, Lannister maneuvering and political maneuvers.
He compares him to a snake pit.
Yeah.
Robert being in a snake pit and not even realizing it, but it's also, as we find out, more than just the Lannisters. It's also Robert's behavior at the end of Robert's Rebellion and the decisions, not the decisions that Robert made, but the things that Robert was okay with, the things that Robert accepted, the way that Ned saw behavior of the Mad King, of Aerys Targaryen, in Robert.
And also the little things, too. The way Robert just controlled the expenses. I mean,
right. Just the way he was living his life.
Just ridiculous. Like how he was just spending so much money on stupid things. And that was also, you know, the people around Robert that probably took advantage. Littlefinger, Varys. Mm-hmm. They knew they can swindle some money out of him, make it look like it. So yeah, this money is for tournaments, but meanwhile, we're going to keep some money or something.
The vices that you have, if you leave them unchecked, they control your life. To anybody with half a brain, it is physically obvious that Robert is a man that loves his wine. The way he behaves in the TV show, it's obvious that he is drinking way too much to the point where it's greatly affecting his health. For a guy like Littlefinger, for a guy like Varys, it's an obvious mark on the man. That's his weakness, and that's what's really controlling this guy's life. So you just let that ride, and you can pretty much do whatever you want. This marriage pact is suggested by King Robert. I'm not sure how Sansa finds out, because I don't see Ned being the type to say something like, "Hey, Sansa, Robert suggested you marry the prince." He'll tell that to Catelyn, obviously.
I mean, Catelyn told her.
You think that's a wise decision for Catelyn to get Sansa all worked up about this?
Stop yourself right there. You just used the word Catelyn and wise in the same sentence about two words apart. So let's... what wise things has Catelyn totally ever done?
Yeah, we've gone through that. Nothing. Nothing that could be considered wise by anybody except for Catelyn. Sansa is a young girl, and she's desperate to see the realm. She's desperate to get out of the north, to leave Winterfell. And she's super excited at the idea of being the queen. She begs Catelyn, and I think it's the scene when Catelyn's doing her hair.
It's all I ever wanted.
Yeah, it's all I ever wanted. She begs Catelyn to make Ned agree to the engagement. But that's really the last of any discussion about it, any reservations that Ned has. At least about the marriage pact. We don't really see that on screen. It's a done deal. Sansa and Arya, their storyline is super intertwined for season one. When the decision is made for Ned to become the Hand and to move part of the Stark household south to King's Landing with him, obviously he's going to bring Sansa. The idea is she'll be queen one day. She can't remain up in the north, especially if Ned's going south. She has to go and be at court. It's just the daughters that Ned brings with him.
Right. It was going to be Bran, but Bran didn't go for a toss.
I mean, obviously, you got to leave Rob. No question. You have to leave Rob. Oh,
yeah,
definitely.
You have to, yeah. You had to leave his... God forbid Eddard had a heart attack on his way down. that stuck in Winterfell.
God forbid the whole thing's a setup. You can understand Ned's reasoning for bringing Bran. I guess you can understand his reasoning for leaving Rickon. The Stark at Winterfell, it's a stronger position if he has an heir at Winterfell. Even though Bran would be Robb's heir, technically, having Rickon there, he does have an heir at Winterfell.
We triple up our heirs at the Stark household.
Yeah. It's amazing how strong, in terms of lineage, the Starks hold on the North is at the beginning of Game of Thrones, to the point where now we're talking about there isn't even a Stark to rule.
Just thinking that.
But with Bran's accident, it's just Sansa and Arya that end up traveling south to establish Ned's household as Hand to the King in King's Landing. During the journey, we have the incident of Joffrey and Nymeria, and Joffrey being injured by Nymeria. with the butcher's boy. What was the butcher's boy's name?
Ah, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
It wasn't Jesus Christ.
No, definitely wasn't.
Oh, God. It's going to be one, yeah, it doesn't matter. It's going to be one of those names. Yeah. I would be like, oh, that was the name. Damn it.
Mm-hmm. But the differences between Arya and Sansa, you know, Arya is a, what we used to call a tomboy. I don't think that's a politically correct term anymore, but Arya is a rough and tumble young girl. She wants to learn to fight with a sword. Specifically, she's excited about the sword that she got from Jon as a gift when she left. She's with the butcher's boy because she thinks it's interesting hanging out with a commoner her age who will do whatever she says and fight with her with swords. That's what they're doing when Joffrey and Sansa go for a romantic walk by the river. It's a real telling scene, right? Because you see Joffrey's true colors right. For the first time.
And this is also really the first time we really see Sansa betraying her family.
Yeah, you can make that argument, absolutely, that she chooses Joffrey, who's obviously acting like a whiny, entitled, immature little boy in this scene.
Because the total skinny of this, if Sansa says, tells the truth.
But she doesn't, well, I mean, she does lie. She lies saying she doesn't remember. But she doesn't lie outright and say Arya and the boy attacked Joffrey. She doesn't quite agree with Joffrey's version of the story, but what really happened, she doesn't confirm that either. I do give this a pass. You do not. But what are the repercussions? What would they have been if she was honest in this scene and she said, yeah, Joffrey's an asshole. Joffrey just attacked this kid and then Nymeria went after him because Nymeria thought Arya was in danger. It doesn't matter if that's the reality of what happened, and it is the reality of what happened. Joffrey's still the crown prince. He can basically do whatever he wants. I say it's a tough spot for Sansa, but it is telling of her future behaviors that have more dire consequences. Cersei decides one of the direwolves has to be killed. Nymeria is not around.
Oh, but there's another one. Well, now Sansa, now thank you. You know, now you get what you deserve. You don't want to be honest, now your wolf dies.
And you think that would have been lesson enough to her, right?
Yeah.
Nope.
You think like, all right, now you see why my father keeps on warning me and where he's going. He does warn her, warn them about the Lannisters. Nope. I still want to marry Joffrey.
She doesn't even make the connection between
what they just did.
Yeah.
How they turned that up, you know, how they just made that turn, that flip of the coin.
So the next big part of Sansa's story in season one is the tourney at King's Landing. And here she meets her future ally, I guess, her future supporter, Peter Baelish, Littlefinger. He is a little bit disgusting in this scene.
He's always disgusted. He just,
yeah.
Especially in the show, Sansa, I want to take you to the back of my outhouse over here, show you what my girls do.
Well, you know, knowing Sansa's age in this scene, it is pretty slimy behavior.
Yeah.
And it's not like he's outright coming on to her, but he's like planting seeds. You know, he's laying the groundwork for future schemes. He tells Sansa how Sandor Clegane was burned by his brother. But then he also says, if he knew that you knew that story, who knows what might happen? He might hurt you, is what Littlefinger alludes to. But Sansa has a great time at the tourney, right? She loves the pageantry, all the pomp and circumstance of the whole thing. And she thinks that this is what life at King's Landing is like.
Yeah,
and she,
this is great. It's so much better than the North.
Sansa becomes more like a Southerner as time passes. She is rude to Septa Mordain. That's pretty much it until the shit hits the fan, so to speak. Ned resigns his hand to the king because Robert is hellbent on not executing Daenerys Targaryen, but hiring assassins to take out her and the baby that she's rumored to be pregnant with. Ned's not going to stand for that. It's like the only time he's seen Robert at a small council meeting. The only time he's seen Robert worked up about anything involving his office as king of the realm is assassinating Daenerys Targaryen. He's not going to stand for that. He resigns his hand to the king. He's going to send the girls back to Winterfell. She compares Joffrey to a lion. He's nothing like that old drunk king.
Right. You've got him all wrong. Yeah, he's worse than the fiend. He's worse than Robert.
He's worse than Robert, and he's nothing like a lion. But that makes something click in Ned's head. Oh, yeah, he is like a lion. And then he figures it out.
All right. Give him the book. Hold on. You idiot.
But then things get bad, and he can't bring this evidence to Robert because Robert's been gored. He's dying. And Ned doesn't want to make his last hours I guess he doesn't want to make them upsetting, you know, at the cost of himself and the entire realm. He doesn't want to make Robert's last hours upsetting. Then we get, for me, the big betrayal. Ned makes secret plans for the girls to return to Winterfell. Mm-hmm. He's going to remain and make sure Robert finds out the truth, make sure that there's a somewhat smooth transition of power from Robert to Stannis. And he doesn't want the girls around for that because things might get a little hairy.
And he's right about that.
He doesn't realize how hairy things can get. It's not like Ned is telling Sansa, well, you know, he's not really Robert's child. He's a bastard of incest. Mm-hmm. He's not telling that to Sansa. Sansa just thinks her lifestyle that she has fallen in love with, that's going to be taken away because Dad's a jerk. He just wants to take all this away from her. So she goes to Cersei, who at this time she thinks is a kind and fair queen that loves her. And she gives up the whole plan, everything she knows about it. Has she addressed that in the following, any of the following seasons of Game of Thrones, that the mistake she made at this point?
Yeah, I think she just blames it on that she was a young girl. And that she was, like, being helped by the Lannisters. Which I guess, to a degree, she was. I'm not saying she wasn't.
You didn't give her a pass for the direwolf situation.
Nope.
So you're definitely not giving her a pass here.
Nope.
Which is worse, do you think? Obviously, this is worse as far as repercussions. But which decision on Sansa's part is worse in terms of betraying your family? Siding against your family?
And the way I look at it, it's both betraying in a way. I mean, almost the same thing a little bit. Ugh. I guess this one's worse because the long-term effects it's a lot worse than the direwolf. This one has a lot more long-term. You know, even still to this day, it's still, you know, the ramifications are still there.
Yeah. In the first case, you could say she lied by saying she doesn't remember. It's not like she sold out her family. Here she's saying, well, my father's going to do this. You have to stop him because I don't want to leave. You know, where in the first case, she's just like, she's kind of in a tough spot. She's like, I don't remember what happened. You know, I don't want to side against my sister, but I don't want to side against my future husband. Here she's like, I want to side against my father because I don't like his decision. I'm going to side with my queen, my future good mother in Cersei. And that's a want. That's a bad decision. But I don't think that Sansa really puts everything together. She doesn't see the connection between what she told Cersei and what happens. She doesn't even make the connection between Ned's arrest and the charge of treason against him and her decision.
Right. It's almost as if she doesn't even understand, like, what treason is.
Right. And then when she finds out her father's in the dungeons and he's charged with treason, she's like, how's that possible? He wouldn't commit treason. And it shows how immature and how ignorant to where she is and to what it really means to rule at King's Landing and the politics and the backstabbing. She didn't even know those things existed because they don't really exist in the North at Winterfell. Honor, straightforward. That's how Ned rules the North. There's nothing like that in the South.
It's a completely different ballgame.
Mm-hmm. And it's kind of sad that she can't make that connection.
I mean, let's be honest here. Even Ned kind of makes that sad. Even Ned, even though Ned knows, he still can't really get past it himself.
It's funny that she doesn't put it together because it's not just that Ned is arrested and charged with treason. It's also everybody that she came south with
is dead.
Is dead.
You don't think something's up?
She's like, this is odd. It's real weird timing. Sansa and Arya don't get a proper send off here. I'm trying to recall what the last scene they have together is.
Was it the scene? I know I'm probably wrong on this. But this too, they probably had a scene together. But the scene where they had that argument in the fight, and then Eddard has to calm Arya down.
No, I think that was earlier on. I think their last scene together until season 7 is when Sansa says he's nothing like that old fat king. He's a lion. And Arya's looking at her like, what are you talking about? He's definitely not a lion. How do you not see what this guy is? They're so unlike each other, Sansa and Arya. I can't think of any qualities they have, behaviors that are similar. I can't think of anything. Sansa lives in this dream world inside her own head. Arya is too young at this point to really see what the world is like, but she has a much firmer grasp on reality than Sansa.
Right. She doesn't have a lot of, like, life lessons, but, like, she has a better scope of, like, what the real life is than what Sansa is. Sansa's in, like, La La Land. You know, Sansa's in her own little, you know, playland.
Hmm. You call her Sansa Tully, but she is more like her mother than like her father. It's obvious. I think the Starks have, at least this generation of Starks, the Ned. I can't really speak to Brandon Stark, but Ned, Benjen, Lyanna, it seems like they are much more matter of fact. Their lives are governed more so by logic, reason, than it is whimsy, fantasy, and hopes and dreams. It doesn't come across as a Stark thing at all, but definitely not in that generation. So the disconnect between how Stark, their outlook on life and their thinking, the disconnect between that and the way Sansa's dreamily going through life, it's all good, everything's going to work out great, I'm going to be queen. It's rather disturbing. Whereas Arya, she's right in the Stark wheelhouse.
I feel like Sansa right now, and just thinking like the Doink music.
Welcome to Sansa Land. I would associate that music more with Catelyn.
Yeah, well, the Benny Hill music also could go with both of them.
Yeah, it works for both of them. Addressing what we initially talked about in this episode, how Sansa is, for lack of a better word, the lightning rod. Oh, you don't like Sansa, it's because you don't like women. If this was Bran making these decisions, right? If this was any Stark making these decisions. It's not because Sansa's, because she's not even a woman at this point. She's a teenage girl. Well, I mean, in Game of Thrones, she's a teenage girl. Sansa's gender at this point has nothing to do with why this is a bad decision and why she should have known better. It's got nothing to do with her being female. But still, somehow, any criticism, any dislike for her character has turned into, well, it's because she's a woman. No, it's not why. Sansa writes the letter to Rob, begging them to swear fealty to Joffrey. She makes no mention of Arya. Not even worried about Arya. And if we go back to the books, at the end of that chapter, she says she didn't even realize that she forgot to ask about her sister. She's not even thinking about Arya at this point.
That little girl that came down with you also.
You know, your sister. But Sansa comes up with a plan to help her father. At court, she begs Joffrey to show Ned mercy. That's her big plan. And Joffrey agrees to show Ned mercy on the condition that he confesses his treason. His treason being, he said Joffrey wasn't the real king, and he tried to...
Why would your father say that? Why would he say that?
Yeah, Sansa doesn't even have any idea. Maybe that's Ned's fault. Maybe Ned should have been more honest. Maybe he should have communicated his hunches, what he found out. I don't think Ned understood the depths that she would stoop to. Ned's treason is not just that Joffrey is not the real king, but also he tried to deliver the Iron Throne to Stannis Baratheon. Joffrey agrees, and we get to the Great Sept of Baelor. Sansa is decked out. She's at the top of the Great Sept of Baelor in front of the huge King's Landing crowd, and she is smiling, and she thinks she's saved her father. She thinks that Joffrey's going to forgive him in front of everybody. She probably thinks they're all going to hug it out. Ned's going to go back north, and Sansa's going to have her life of pageantry and tourneys and pretty clothes and all this stuff. It all comes crashing down. Oh, man. Does she faint? Is that what she does in the TV show?
She cannot believe it. Oh, my God. What have I done?
But I don't think she's even thinking that at this time. I give that a pass, too, that she doesn't realize that this all connects back to decisions she's made.
Yeah,
she's
not, no, she never connects that. Like, it's never, I don't think it's ever, even when she really, even when she comes to, like, you know, when she talks to Arya in season 7, it's just like, I was a young girl. Like, dude, you're a young girl who got your father killed pretty much. You're a young girl that, you know, made.
What's Joffrey's line? As long as I'm your king, treason shall never go unpunished. Sir Ilyn, bring me his head. And we end season 1, Sansa grieving for the death of her father. She finally sees who Joffrey is when Joffrey makes her look upon her father's head and Septa Mordain's head on spikes. She begs Joffrey to let her return home. Joffrey's like, no, what do you mean return home? It's a marriage pact. It's still in place. And then he says he will give her the gift of Robb's head. Sansa says, well, maybe.
Give me your head.
And she gets smacked for that. I don't think Joffrey smacks her, though, right? Meryn Trant.
Yeah, Weasel, Kingsguardman. And then, and then she's about to, like, throw him off the... and then Sandor comes in there and, like, stops her from doing that.
It's a real interesting scene and very well acted by Sophie Turner for a young actor. She's looking at suicide as a way out. And then she's thinking, pushing him off and going with him. And Sandor is there. And I think it's probably important to talk about the relationship between Sansa and Sandor. More focus is put on it in the source material to the point where she misremembers a moment in Clash of Kings where Sandor is drunk and in her apartments, in her room. She misremembers that later on in A Feast for Crows, I believe. She thinks that Sandor kissed her in that scene, and he didn't. But she, for some reason, remembers it as him giving her a kiss before he left. It's interesting that she misremembers that. I could kind of see how she started to finally look at Sandor. You know, she was so afraid of him at first because of his burned face, the story that Peter Baelish told her about Sandor, just the gruff demeanor that Sandor had. A book later in A Clash for Kings where Sandor says, I'll bring it back to Winterfell. He was always there protecting her in a way. When things were going to cross the line to real bad for her, he was there to either stop her behavior or to pick her up in that one scene when Meryn Trant beating her at court. He was always looming, always somewhat protective of her. It does feel like the focus is more on a Sandor-Arya reunion. And there was nothing with the Sandor-Sansa reunion in season 7, was there?
No, because he went, yeah, no, they didn't really go to Winterfell. That'll be this year. Yeah. We'll see Sansa and Sandor being reunited.
But just when it looks like she's about to push Joffrey off the moat, Sandor is there and he wipes some blood from her mouth. He said, what does he say? He says, just do what he says. It'll be easier.
Yeah.
Something to that effect. I think that's the last we see of her in season 1. So when we pick up season 2, she's got that same look in her eye, and she's at the tourney for King Joffrey's name day. And it's a good contrast, right? Because we remember the tourney from season 1, all the banners, tents, the pageantry, everybody's happy. And now we have, not even a year later, another tourney, and it's taking place inside the Red Keep for Joffrey's protection as the War of the Five Kings has broken out. Not in earnest. I don't think all five kings were involved yet. She saved Ser Dantas Hollard, the drunk knight. She saves him from being killed by Joffrey.
Let me ask you, was Baelish there seeing that?
No, he was in King's Landing, but he wasn't.
Okay.
He kept himself away from Dantas Hollard. We find the reveal later that he's working for Littlefinger. During this tournament, Tyrion returns to King's Landing, and he is the acting hand to the king. And Tyrion, he says, you know, I'm sorry about your father. I'm sorry about the loss of your father. And Sansa says her family are all traitors, that she's loyal to Joffrey.
Ugh.
Tyrion's like, oh, boy.
What have they done?
Yeah, okay. Well, you know, of course you are.
My sister would be proud.
Real tactful by Tyrion here and walking that line where his family's doing pretty nasty things.
Right.
But, yeah, go ahead.
It's probably also kind of like a little rub against Cersei too, you know. And Joffrey, you know, to make sure, like, you know.
Oh, you mean a rub against Cersei and Joffrey?
Yeah, like, I feel bad for your loss, you know, kind of saying it shouldn't have happened.
He understands the tragedy, even though it's a war, or it's politics, or it's something tragic that happened because of the conflict between House Stark, House Lannister. He does understand the tragedy and the human element of it. The next major scene with Sansa season 2 is, I think this is the victory Rob has over, I mean, in the books, it's Sir Stafford Lannister and the second Lannister host that he was raising in Lannisport. Sansa gets publicly beaten for it, humiliated in front of the court. Joffrey tells Sir Meryn to strip her naked. Sandor Clegane is there and he helps her up.
Before I get confused, I think I'm getting confused. Is this the scene where Tyrion comes in?
Yes.
And says, what are you doing? They have your uncle. Like, if you do anything to her right now, they're going to, you know, not that they should have killed Jaime already. You know, Jaime shouldn't be killed.
Well, that's a whole different story, yeah. But yeah.
But if they did anything to Sansa and or Arya, the Starks would have to do it.
That's Tyrion's thinking. Yeah, I mean, from a point of view of war, from a point of view of holding noble hostages, and there are rules to that. It's similar to, like, you know, the laws concerning prisoners of war. If somebody surrenders, you're not supposed to kill them. As far as nobility, as far as Westeros, if you're of a noble house, if you're a noble person and you're in battle and you're caught or you surrender, there's certain rules to how you have to be treated. You have to be protected, basically. And then it becomes, how important are you to your family you get treated better. You're a hostage more so than a prisoner. It's not political capital, but it's like, capture Jaime Lannister and you capture Tywin Lannister, war's over. Even if the Lannisters outnumber you, it's like a game of chess. You may take both my bishops. You may take my knight and my two rooks. You may have both your rooks, both your bishops, both your knights, but I took your queen. So the game's still kind of even because of the position the queen has, the power that the queen has. And that's the case with Jaime. In terms of political capital and in terms of hostages, Jaime's a much more powerful piece to have as hostage than Sansa, or even Sansa and Arya together. I would even go so far as to say having Jaime in hand puts Rob in a better position, even if Ned was alive. Even Ned, Arya, and Sansa, I'd say that having Jaime is better than having Ned, Arya, and Sansa.
Really?
Yeah, because...
Even with Ned there?
Yeah, I think so, because Rob is at Winterfell, and Bran's at Winterfell, Rickon's at Winterfell. There are no Lannister heirs at this point. Joffrey's a Baratheon. It'd be different if Joffrey was a Lannister, and hostages don't get any more valuable than Jaime. Then he has a conversation with Sansa, removing her from the throne room, and he says if she wants, he can have the engagement called off. And in Sansa's mind, she thinks it's a trap. She doesn't trust any Lannisters, even though Tyrion is a Lannister that can be trusted, at least trusted to be honest. But Sansa says she's loyal to Joffrey. I think Tyrion says something to the effect of she may survive King's Landing after all. And this is a Benioff and Weiss original joint. Tyrion
Maybe like a special edition, like TBD, where they need a little sticker flashing on the corner of the top.
Just every part of the story that's like
D&D original.
Tyrion puts Shay in a position as Sansa's handmaiden. Man, I hated this. And they make Sansa and Shay form a friendship. Sansa trusts Shay so much that she vents about her hatred of the Lannisters. Not into it. I didn't like the character Shay in the books. And I definitely did not like the actress that...
The actress definitely didn't do anything to restore.
Very frustrating. I said we have the scene where Marcella Baratheon departs for Dorne for a marriage alliance and a peace alliance between the Lannisters and the Martells that Tyrion worked out.
It's so amazing that's back in season two.
It was like a different Marcella left than the one that came home. And we have the bread riots as Joffrey and Sansa, Cersei, the whole retinue as they're returning to the Red Keep. The riot breaks out in the streets of King's Landing. Does Sansa get lost in the shuffle, so to speak, in the book? Also, I honestly don't remember. I know in the story we see her get chased down.
Yeah. She's just about to
It's off screen in the books, off page, so to speak. But they show it. They show the action in Game of Thrones. And again, it's Sandor turning out to be not what Sansa initially thought, not a monster, not a scary man, but
protector.
Yeah. Sandor saves her, and then and then Sansa has her period.
Trying to hide that, so like
she tries to burn her. She tries to burn her sheets.
So, like that right there, though, does show her. It does show us, though, that she knows now. Maybe at this point, really, she's starting to. They find this out, then they're going to want a baby, and I don't want to have a baby. Finally, now she's realized I don't want to have a baby with this guy.
She has to do a lot of growing up here. It's safe to say what she thought of the world, what she thought of King's Landing, what she thought of Joffrey, this whole situation. She's done a 180 at this point. Joffrey had said something to the effect of, you have your flowering, I'll put a son in you.
That's like so, it's just so like...
He's such a prick. But she keeps that in the back of her mind. When she finally wakes up with blood on her bed, she realizes what's happening. She can be married, have a child. Of course, they write Shay into the scene here. Shay tries to help her burn the sheets. She tries to help her conceal the bloodstains, and Shay threatens to kill another handmaiden if she tells anybody that Sansa had her period, which the handmaiden does anyway. Or no, Sandor. I think Sandor sees the blood.
I don't know. I think you're right the first time. I think it was the handsman. I don't think Sandor would rat. Because he knew. Yeah, like he knew if she,
Sansa and Cersei it's probably the most genuine conversation we see from Cersei throughout the whole series, I think, is the conversation she has with Sansa about being a woman. She basically tells Sansa that she understands why she's scared of her flowering. She understands that she may not love Joffrey, but she will love her children. She warns Sansa, the more people she loves, the weaker she will be. Blackwater episode, Joffrey makes Sansa kiss the blade of his sword.
I'm not dead. After I slice Stannis, I'll come back for your traitor brother. I would love to see him in a one-on-one fight against Stannis. Oh, God, that was great. God,
yeah. Joffrey's such a tyrant and a monster with such a heavy bearing on Sansa's life. But in all of his enemies outside of King's Landing, he's a joke. He's an afterthought. Everybody knows they're fighting Tywin.
Yeah.
So in the TV show, Sansa is in Maegar's Holdfast with Cersei and all the noble women. And when the battle looks like it's taking a turn for the worse, for House Lannister, Cersei takes off. And it's up to Sansa to calm the women down by singing a hymn. Or whatever she does. And then she...
Gentle mother.
Yeah.
I can't say. Oh,
no, but you get the melody, right? All the noble women are immediately all calmed down. Sansa goes to her own apartments, and she finds Sandor Clegane there. Who
always popping up.
Yeah. Well, this is the last time because he was...
he runs off.
Offers Sansa to go with him, and he'll bring her to Winterfell. I don't know. I feel like she should have taken that offer. It goes to show how much more growth Sansa still has to do, not taking this offer from Sandor, but then taking the offer from Ser Dantas a couple seasons later. A different set of circumstances, but... And we end season two, their marriage is called off. The whole time, Joffrey, from afar, has fallen in love with Lady Margaery Tyrell, and vice versa.
And she thinks she's out. She thinks she's out, and then Littlefair comes back in there. He'll never be out of his clutches.
Yeah, she probably thinks she's out to the point of she thinks she's going to go back to Winterfell like it's all good.
Yeah. God. What an ass clown. Just like we think, like, you know, she's getting some sense. She's starting to see, you know, the sun through the clouds. Like, all of a sudden, she just goes back into this, you know, fantasy world.
Yeah. And Peter comes in and he knocks that down. Season three. Kind of a weird season for Sansa. Not a whole lot for her to do at all in season three. Her escape from King's Landing isn't until season four. Joffrey doesn't really pick on her as much in season three. Littlefinger offers to smuggle her out of King's Landing, but she's reluctant. She meets the Tyrells. She becomes close enough with Margaery to tell her, please don't marry Joffrey. You know, he's a monster. She tells that to Olena Tyrell, right?
Yeah. And this is where they have all the Tyrells want her to marry
Loras,
and then Tywin gets a hold out. No, she's going to be marrying Tyrion.
Yeah. Yeah. It is kind of interesting to see the larger politics in the show. We see a scene with Tywin and Olena. Sansa tells Olena Tyrell and Margaery that Joffrey's a monster. She was so scared to say this to them.
Right.
And they're like so unfazed by it. I'm like, all right, well, you know, we'll handle it. I think Sansa kind of looks up to that, no?
I'm trying to think back to her reaction.
I think Sansa becomes more like Margaery as her story progresses. You know, Cersei, Margaery, Littlefinger, unfortunately more so than her own mother and father, they're big influences on her life and the noble lady that she becomes.
You think she's kind of learning that this is stuff that she should have been stronger.
Right. Yeah.
You know, like, against Joffrey, how she, you know. But it's also weird, though, too, is that, what's her name, Margaery, you know, is doing all this stuff for the poor. And it seems like Joffrey, he's more of a fake around her than he was around Sansa.
That's a good point. That's interesting. And it's true. But why do you think that is? Like, why do you think he never?
I don't know.
He never mistreats Margaery. It's got nothing to do with the alliance between Lannister and Tyrell. Tywin, Cersei, Tyrion, not that they're walking on eggshells around the Tyrells, but they need that alliance. They need House Tyrell's wealth and House Tyrell's
maybe
military.
Maybe it is because of the alliance. Maybe Cersei said, listen, you have to play the game here because we really, you know, wasn't for them, we'd all be dead.
She probably said something along those lines, and that may be part of it, but like I feel there was a change in Joffrey's character. he's different around Margaery. Margaery's a lot different than Sansa. Sansa came across as somebody that Joffrey could pick on, whereas Margaery, she's more of a woman, where Sansa was a little girl. And I think that's intimidating to Joffrey. Do you think he's like in awe of Margaery? Like, do you think he's...
Possibly. Do you think he finds her more attractive than Sansa?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Plus, I think it's the age he's at. He's less in adolescence and more into being a young man who may be thinking about his wedding night more so than he was with Sansa. But the way Margaery carries herself, she knows what's going on. And that comes across where Sansa, she's got no idea what's going on. Margaery acts as like she just got the idea that Sansa should marry Loras. And then she'll be allowed to leave King's Landing. And Sansa's like, hell yeah.
I'll go live in the nice weather of the Reach.
The Reach of Highgarden, yeah. And I'm sure she's immediately picturing that. All this growth she had, she immediately goes back to that bright-eyed, bushy-tailed young girl that came to King's Landing. She totally reverts. It's like the past year or however long it was. It's like that didn't happen. That comes crashing down real quick when Tywin learns about this plan that the Trolls have. That's interesting, too, that Sansa doesn't see the political motivation of the Trolls. She's not a pawn, but she's a piece of the game. She's not playing the Game of Thrones, right? She's a piece. She doesn't see how she is a road for any of these families to take control of the North, to take control of Winterfell. She just doesn't see it. She thinks it's a marriage because Loras kind of likes her. Because Loras is really in love with her. So he wants to marry. He's got nothing to do with that. Doesn't matter because she doesn't marry Loras. Tywin swoops in.
Swoops in to intercept like an eel coming down from the sky.
Like a lion pouncing on its prey.
When he sees blood, forget about it.
So we probably get the, maybe not the happiest wedding in Game of Thrones, but definitely the safest and least eventful. I hate to change the subject. I don't know who put the tweet out, but they said, according to the Dothrakis, the Red Wedding was a great affair. Joffrey is an asshole at their pretty much a shotgun wedding. You know, there's enough nobility there to witness the wedding, which is really important part of these things for the great lords is that people witness the wedding and people witness the betting so people can say, yeah, they're married.
That doesn't go through with it.
I mean, they go to the bed, you know, they go to the room, but he doesn't allow the undressing. He doesn't allow that. He just grabs Sansa by the hand and goes to their chambers. He knows he has to consummate the marriage. But he also still sees Sansa as a child, and he knows that Sansa fears him. Not fears him like she fears Joffrey, but for much of Sansa's life, all the Lannisters were the same. Tyrion realizes how unhappy she is, and she doesn't have to consummate the marriage unless she wants to. Which Sansa says, what if I never want to? Think of the book Tyrion says, that's what whores are for, but he says it to himself. Here he says, and so my watch begins, which is a joke about the Night's Watch and how they take oaths to...
Right.
You know, not have sex. More so in the show, Sansa and Tyrion have a decent friendship, I guess, and he treats her well. Things are okay for her. You know, Joffrey can't pick on her as much. Tyrion takes care of her. But then she finds out about the Red Wedding. And I think that's how we leave her in season 3.
That was a powerful, actually a powerful scene because, you know, Tyrion goes in to tell her. And by the time, you know, he gets there, she already knows. You know, he can see the tears. Yeah, I'm giving credit to a Sansa scene.
Less because of Sansa, I think it's more because of the writer and the director of that episode. You don't need to see Sansa receive the news because you can already imagine what her reaction will be. So they give it by Tyrion's point of view. They have him learn about it. Joffrey's celebrating the victory. They're all celebrating that Robb's been defeated. Tyrion's not so happy about it. And it's not that he's upset that they beat House Stark or that Robb's dead. It's just the way they went about it. He's not good with that. Plus, he knows how it will affect Sansa. He doesn't really care about Sansa. That's another reunion I'm really looking forward to, is Sansa and Tyrion. And that should be episode 1, right?
You would imagine, unless they just drag out Jon and Dany coming to Winterfell for an episode somehow. But I don't know how long I don't think they'll do that. Hopefully they'll just get it over with. Get on the business.
Season 4. Sophie Turner has... I think she does a lot of growing up in between season 3 and season 4. The actress, I mean. But Sansa in character is still distraught over the death of Robb and Catelyn. Now she gets approached by Ser Dantas. Then this is the first time we see him since that episode, right?
Yeah.
When we didn't see him after episode one of season two, I think the rumor was it would be Roz that takes his place and gets her out of King's Landing. But he comes back here. He gives her a necklace that he says that it was his mother's. The necklace turns out to hold poison.
All part of the plan.
Mm-hmm. She's still a pawn, Sansa. Episode two is the purple wedding, right? Season four. Take it, man. What'd you think of book to screen with the purple wedding?
I mean, I enjoyed it. I just always assumed, just envisioned that the wedding was more of an inside event and not outside. I don't know if I was wrong on that. Maybe in a way I read it could have easily been wrong.
No, I took that the same way also. You know. Yeah. But Joffrey dies pretty much the same way he did in the books. Except for Sansa, there's no plan in place where the night of the wedding, I'll help you escape from King's Landing. Instead, runs up on her as Joffrey's dying and says,
it's now or never.
Doesn't he say something like, they're going to think you did it, you have to come with me?
Yeah, I think something to that degree.
It's pretty tight from Littlefinger's point of view. It does work, but yeah, how is she going to say no to that? You know, of course Cersei's going to think that. And Sansa thinks she's escaping, but she's still a piece to the bigger game. Except now Littlefinger has her in hand. Speaking to Littlefinger, maybe this is his big play in A Song of Ice and Fire, but it's somewhat disappointing to the Littlefinger character. It's definitely a good play, but that was the extent of his plan. Get some power, Lord of Harrenhal, and he was also Warden of the Riverlands.
Harrenhal.
Also with the title of Lord of Harrenhal, which he was given as a reward for his service during the War of the Five Kings. Basically, he got Hoster Tully's titles, Lord Paramount of the Riverlands. But that title then gives him the position to marry Lysa Arryn, the widow, and the Lady of the Vale. Ser Dantas brings Sansa to the boat, and we get to reveal that it's Littlefinger that's helping her escape. Obviously, they kill Ser Dantas. Does he tell her that Joffrey was poisoned by her necklace?
Yes, because he smashes it.
Right. They don't dye her hair yet. They enter the Vale, and Sansa is his niece, Lane Stone. But she doesn't have her hair dyed yet. But they go to the Eyrie, they go to see her aunt Lysa. Lysa lets Sansa know that she's in on it. She knows that Sansa is her niece. We get crazy Lysa pretty quick, right?
It's always been crazy.
Yeah. I think Sansa at first is happy to see her aunt and feels safe. All of a sudden, she's like, uh-oh, my aunt is crazy. She does see Peter Baelish kiss Sansa. But something happens before that where Sansa's like, oh, she's off her meds. Chick's crazy. Doesn't she like hit Robin Arryn?
Is that when Robin Arryn jumps on the snow land of Winterfell?
The snow castle she built of Winterfell, yeah.
He freaks out.
Yeah.
There's another guy that's going to live to the end.
Yeah, Sansa hits him. Littlefinger shows up. He says that he was in love with Catelyn.
Yeah.
And then he kisses her? Or does he say he's in love with her? I forget what he says exactly. But
I mean, I always loved this system more than you.
Right. Because Lysa sees Littlefinger kiss Sansa. Lysa summons her to the throne room to threaten her. Sansa's like, I didn't kiss him. Like, he kissed me. What do you want me to do? Littlefinger tells the Lords of the Vale that she committed suicide. Sansa's called to give testimony. And he or she reveals who she really is, and she supports Peter Baelish's story. That's good enough for the Lords of the Vale, Ned Stark's daughter. If she says Littlefinger's all right, then he's all right. I think that's it for season four of Sansa,
because then pretty much we go to Baelish going off to the north with her to...
Yeah. Eesh. And it doesn't feel organic. Littlefinger makes a marriage alliance between Sansa and Ramsay Bolton, who's now... He's legitimized and the heir to the North. After the death of Robb Stark, Roose becomes Warden of the North. Ramsay is his heir. And Sansa is reluctant to marry Ramsay, obviously.
You want me to marry someone that killed my brother? Yeah.
But Littlefinger says the marriage will give her the opportunity to avenge her family. I don't know if I buy all that. But they see Brienne of Tarth on the way to Winterfell. And she's like, I swore to your mom I'd take care of you. You should come with me. And Sansa's like, well, like, what are we going to do? Where are we going to go? I think, you know, Sansa is finally starting to mature at this point, and she realizes there is no escape from this life. She's a noble lady, no matter what. And maybe that's what Benioff and Weiss were trying to get across with her marriage to Ramsay. But it just feels like a way for them to condense a lot of storylines. Brienne follows her. to Winterfell, and does she tell her that she'll always be looking? No, it's Sansa's handmaiden at Winterfell, right? That Brienne works out the plan with the candles or whatever.
No, it wasn't Sansa's handmaiden. Wasn't it just some late old lady?
Yeah, they should have made it old man. Oh, she sees that Theon Greyjoy is basically Ramsay's slave.
That's like, she has to yell at him like, you know, you murdered Bran and Rickon, your brothers. And then Theon gives it up. No, wasn't Bran and Rickon.
I forget when she confronts him. Well, maybe she doesn't confront them until after she's married.
Yeah, that is true. I'm skipping. Oh, wow. Fuck the timeline.
Well, it's because it's all like a cluster. Like they're trying to get, and honestly, they do a better job of it than George R. R. Martin, but getting all the pieces where they need to be to move the story forward. So it is a bit of a cluster, but I did like the wedding aesthetically. I like the way the wedding looked in front of the Godswood. I wonder who directed that episode, but it looked real good. But then Ramsay rapes Sansa and forces Theon to watch. And as we find out later on, Bran's actually watching also. Ramsay continues to rape and beat Sansa every night, keeps her locked in the bedchamber. Sansa begs Theon to help her signal her northern allies. So I guess she did know about the candle in the broken tower. And then I didn't get this. Theon tells Ramsay about the tower candle. The maid that was helping Sansa communicate with Brienne is flayed. And Ramsay makes Sansa look at her corpse, which is a throwback to Joffrey making Sansa look. Then Sansa confronts Theon. Theon admits that he didn't capture Bran and Rickon. He killed two farm boys in their place. At the same time, Stannis has launched the worst war campaign ever. Directly marching on Winterfell. Sansa is able to signal Brienne. And of course, Brienne has left her post because she heard Stannis is here. Brienne choosing her oath as a member of the Rainbow Guard before the oath she made to Catelyn is basically what's going on with Brienne here, right?
Mm-hmm. It's definitely a throwback.
Yeah. That was the first oath she made as a member of the Rainbow Guard. She made that long before she made an oath to Catelyn. What was Ramsay's girlfriend's name?
Something with an M?
Yeah. I feel like she's named after a character from the books, but it's not the same character. Whoever it is, she catches Sansa not in her room. She shouldn't threaten to kill Sansa.
It's not Madeline. No.
No.
It's something with an M, I think.
But Theon, Miranda. Yeah. Miranda. Theon throws Miranda to her death just as the Bolton forces return from their mop-up victory over Stannis. Theon is scared of Ramsay's reaction, so he and Sansa jump from Winterfell's battlements into the snow, and that's it for season 5. This nowhere met the excitement and the fear of Theon's escape from Winterfell in A Dance with Dragons. That was some scary stuff. What did you think of the whole Sansa marries Ramsay storyline?
Obviously another shortcut, definitely.
It's a big-time Benioff and Weiss original joint here. It's rewriting George Martin's material. And in the big scheme of things, it makes sense, right?
The thing that gets a little upsetting about it is, you know, in the books, there's been plenty of times for Jon Snow to have gone down south, to have forsaken his vows to the Night Watch. Father Eddard was caught. He wanted to go down and fight with Rob. When Rob got killed, there was plenty of times. And the show with doing with Sansa, it ruins it kind of a little bit. Because there's just... See, in the show, Sansa comes
there's
up
no
north first. I'm skipping ahead.
Pink letter or the equivalent in the show, is there?
No, there is. That's the letter that Jon reads.
Okay.
That's their equivalent to the pink letter. That's in season 6. What I'm trying to say is in the books, when he gets the pink letter, yeah, we can argue that Ramsay has made or the author has threatened Jon because he's going to come up north. They have Mance Rayder, they have Stannis, they have this, that, and that. But the long skinny of it is the reason why Jon goes down there, really, deep down, is because he thinks they have Arya.
Right.
And Jon would save Arya. Honor brought him back with Ned.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't go down south to revenge Rob. There's only one person that Jon will do it for, and that is Arya. And it just kind of, it ruins it a little bit by not having the fake Arya character, because would Jon really do that for Sansa?
Benioff and Weiss do cover themselves by timing.
They put the timing, they put Jon's death first.
Right, so he's free of his vows.
Right.
That is an interesting point. When Ned is captured, he races off to help his brother Rob. Honor brings him back. It's like a knee-jerk reaction.
Mm-hmm.
Then when Rob is killed, he's missed that because he was beyond the wall. But when he finds out, he knows his place is at the wall. There's nothing he can do about that.
He's not going to take any more vengeance. He's not going to go down south and take vengeance.
Because he knows he can at this point. And he knows that there's a bigger fight at the wall. And then Stannis offering him Winterfell, offering to legitimize him, make him Jon Stark. All right, you couldn't avenge your family, but you can carry on your family at Winterfell and make sure nothing bad happens to your family again. Because you will be Jon Stark, Warden of the North. And he's real tempted at that, but he turns that down as well. When he gets that pink letter and really figures out, sees who Ramsay is, that Arya may be in danger, there's no question. Not even is there no question, he enlists the Wildlings to help him. He knows he's betraying his vows, you know, all premeditated, and he's about to go march on Winterfell when he's betrayed in the books. It seems like they don't even go there, though, in the show. They time it so... I don't even know if he knew that Sansa was married to Ramsay. They would say the wall is the last place for news to reach.
I'm trying to think back if he got word of it.
I don't remember him mentioning anything about it. He was busy with the Hardhome and, you know, the whole Night's King thing. So, but he's murdered and brought back before he has to make any decision about whether or not to save Sansa. Benioff and Weiss do, I think, for the most part, cover themselves there. But we get our first big reunion in season 6 when Sansa does arrive at Castle Black. Sansa doesn't say we're going to go to Castle Black. Theon lets go, and Theon's like, oh, I'm going to go return to the Iron Islands. I don't think Theon doesn't go with her out of fear for Jon.
Theon says, I can't go up north there because Jon's there and Jon will kill me, you know, if I go up north.
Right.
And then we see Sansa and Jon, as you said, the first Stark reunion.
Mm-hmm. Least important. Well, it ends up being pretty important, but.
Yeah, it seems pretty emotional. A lot more emotional than I thought it would be.
Well, because it was the first one, that's why.
Yeah.
You know? Sansa persuades Jon to help her drive the Boltons out of Winterfell. Jon refuses, but then he gets the letter.
He still refuses, and she still has to, you know, coerce him into doing it.
Well, yeah, Ramsay says he has Rickon Stark, and he threatens to kill the Starks and the Wildlings. Jon is let through the wall if Sansa is not returned to him. He doesn't tell Sansa that he died and came back to life, right?
I don't think so, no.
Dude, they gloss over that so much. Jon and Sansa spend a lot of time in season 6 rallying houses to their cause. The only real help they get is House Mormont, baby.
One and only.
Uh-huh. Everybody loved Lyanna Mormont so much, and she had such little screen time in season 7, and I can't see her having a whole lot in season 8. I guess it speaks to how good that actress was in the role. So they have like 50 guys from House Mormont.
62. This is where really part we start seeing Jon and Sansa arguing with each other. You know, Jon knows it's not enough men. Sansa, you know, making deals behind Jon's back.
Yeah. All the things that Sansa did in season 1, if I was able to give that a pass because of her age, this is the stuff that I really have a problem with Sansa doing.
I understand the plot. I understand the war strategy.
Mm-hmm.
But it's almost as if she doesn't care if Jon dies.
It is like that, because it's either she doesn't trust him with the information.
If she tells Jon the strategy that he has the veil, Jon's not going to attack.
But he's going to wait for the veil, right?
He's going to wait for the veil.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Sansa knew that the only way to win this was to get the Bolton army away from Winterfell, out of Winterfell.
Mm-hmm. By them thinking they have an easy victory.
Right.
And
so in that regard, it's almost that she doesn't care about Jon dying. Jon can easily die in that battle.
Right. That's the issue with it. It's not that warfare is unacceptable or that kind of play is unacceptable. Like, you have to do what you have to do to win a battle. But the fact that she was willing to sacrifice Jon, maybe I'm taking it the wrong way, but she knew Rickon was a lost cause. She knew that Ramsay was going to kill Rickon no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
So she wrote him off, whereas Jon's like, well, we have to try and save him. Are Benioff and Weiss saying that Sansa is now finally a player in the Game of Thrones? Maybe Sansa's right in this whole thing. But I just don't like that she gave up on Rickon and she was willing to sacrifice Jon to be the Lady of Winterfell. It's like a pretty Catelyn Tully move. Difference being, Catelyn Tully is not capable of a successful move like that. Sansa also sends Brienne to the Riverlands to convince the Blackfish to aid the Starks. Like, oh yeah, okay, yeah, I'm under siege, but I'll definitely leave the castle and help you win Winterfell back. No problem. But they do have a scene right after they win Winterfell, and Sansa says she's sorry for not telling Jon.
Mm-hmm.
Jon forgives her.
And then, yeah, she said, a white raven came.
Because.
Which is his character.
But it's also, I feel like it'll come into play when Jon shows up with Daenerys.
Yeah, but she won't forgive him, though.
Mm-hmm.
Someone made a comment. Maybe I'll go to off on Johnny for one real quick, but I just want to make mention of it. Basically said that whoever this one is far too gentle, whereas Daenerys and Jon are always out for revenge and killing people. You might say that about Daenerys, but like...
Well, who said this?
Some guy on YouTube. And I'm like, what about Jon? Jon's like freed so many people. Jon has to reluctantly kill people, yeah, but he doesn't want to do it. You can say Daenerys maybe, yes, fire and blood. You
know, that's a dumb thing for that person to say. That's like not Jon at all.
That's not Jon at all. Jon, if anything, is actually too kind-hearted, maybe. He's too much like Eddard.
Does Jon still think Theon killed Bran and Rickon?
I don't think so. I imagine Sansa had to have told him.
Well, that's why, that's part of the reason I ask.
Jon lets him go, and Jon actually says, if it wasn't for Sansa, you'd be dead.
Right.
See, I think if that's Daenerys, I think, you know, Daenerys kills him.
Yeah.
By that time now he knows that Bran's alive, because by that time he's getting letters from Bran, the time he sees Theon in season 7. So, you know, he knows. It's a new point. He knows. Yeah. And he lets Theon go anyway, so it's not.
But Theon still betrayed Robb. He still took Winterfell. He still messed up a lot of things for House Stark. It'd be understandable if he killed him, but he doesn't. He shows restraint. And that's the only example I can think of Jon having any thoughts on revenge. You know? You know, even, I mean, yeah, he wants to kill Ramsay, but he doesn't. He could have, but he doesn't. He wanted Ramsay to face justice. That's a stupid thing for that guy to say. That's totally, totally inaccurate. And there's nothing gentle about Sansa in season 6, season 7. She's, like, I guess she's a player now. She's like a northern version of Cersei at this point.
And just one real before you go on to season 7, they had that key
King of the North?
Key scene with Baelish and Sansa talking about who do you think the North's gonna follow? The true blood daughter of Ned and Catelyn Stark? Or a bastard son of a motherless child born in the South?
Well, option B is what they choose. let's talk about that real quick. Like, because, I mean, season 7, what does Sansa do? You know, her reunion with Arya. And, but most of season 7 for Sansa is about
arguing with Arya and had said the possible tension that one was going to betray one or the other.
Right, which is all a ruse for Littlefinger. So, I mean, there's not much to say about season 7. I think the big stuff for Sansa is here in these episodes. You know, Littlefinger reveals his plan to her. He wants to marry her and rule Westeros, and she's like, denies him.
And then another key scene, key scene we see Jon's forgiveness is Jon doesn't kill Ned Umber and Alys Carstark.
Was that season 6 or season 7?
That's 7.
Yeah, that's like the first episode, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't think Sansa wanted to kill them either, but she wanted to give those castles.
Yeah, right. She didn't want to kill them, but, you know, wanted those castles to people who were loyal to House Stark. That's such an awesome scene.
Yeah. And
love that scene.
And that's a good summary of why the Vale and Northerners declared Jon their king. Right? Because Sansa's way of thinking, understandably so, is a Southern way of thinking.
Right. But then like one episode later, they're like, we should have had you the queen. You know, it's like, I don't know. I've always had a problem with that. Like one episode later, you know, Glover's out there, Lady Stark, we should have named you the queen instead of naming Jon King.
Yeah. I mean, you kind of understand why they're mad, but, that line honestly should have been given to, one of the Lords of the Vale, right? But whatever. Yeah. It is what it is. Before the scene where they declared Jon their king, why do you think, I mean, they look at him as the person that won the Battle of the Bastards, right? Sansa, you could say Sansa won it with her politicking to get the Knights of the Vale involved. I mean, that was the winning stroke, but for Northerners, they look
it's
at the battle.
Yeah. It's Jon on the front line. Yeah. It's Jon being the guy.
Right. And that's the difference between people of the North and people of the South. It's like, grandstanding. you know, it's appearances in the South. The North, it's like good old hard work. And I don't think Sansa expected to be named Queen of the North. Like, I don't think she thought that they would say Queen of the North. But I think she thought they would recognize
some more credit.
Yeah, like she thought they would recognize that she won the battle. You know, she won back Winterfell, and she did in many ways. But she wouldn't have without Jon. And maybe she thought all the credit should go to her because she was kind of treating Jon as a piece in the game. But it was the two of them together that won Winterfell. You know, I'm sure that theme will play into season 8, the Starks as a whole. And it did in season 7. They tricked Littlefinger, who was trying to divide them all, and they ended up together. Starks are stronger than apart, I guess. I think that will play more so into season 8. But that look when Jon's declared king between Sansa and Peter Baelish, you thought there would be more to it, right?
In a way, Baelish didn't have enough time to really get his claws. I mean, he definitely tried to keep on spewing his garbage to have Sansa and Jon not, you know. Because I think it was that one scene in season 7, must have been episode 1 or 2, where they're talking in front of the courtyard.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. When I look at season 7 now, it just seems like the whole thing was a work. And I guess it's when Arya shows up that they put together the timeline in King's Landing that led to Ned's beheading. Bran obviously knows everything. It must have been, I guess, when they had that scene in front of the Heart Tree, right?
Mm-hmm.
They must have put it together there.
But there's also, I believe, I think I mentioned before, this deleted scene that they never showed.
Yeah, you did say this.
Which makes no sense why they wouldn't show it.
But
maybe they're too obvious then.
It was a Bran scene?
I think a Bran and Sansa scene.
Okay.
Bran's like, Sansa, don't kill Arya. I seen it all.
Yeah, I feel like the whole storyline was a little bit padded. If we knew the Starks were in
cahoots.
It. Yeah, which, I mean, they're family. Why wouldn't they be? But if they didn't use, like, editing tricks, which they, Benioff and Weiss, did, to make the viewer think that there was actually discord, there was animosity and mistrust between Sansa and Arya. It doesn't work for me because it's like making us think the Starks are something they're not for the sole reason of a payoff of a one-scene payoff in which Littlefinger is finally beat at his own game. It didn't feel organic. The payoff was real good. I give you that. Now, what do you think? You think it was a little too much on that whole Sansa versus Arya
thing? I just don't think, just bounce off what you're kind of saying a little bit, just I don't think you can really just possibly see that Arya or Sansa were going to die season 7 by each other's hands, you know?
Yeah. You only have so much time with these characters, and you omit some characters because of logistics, because of time. You omit some characters so not to confuse the audience any further, because it's such a complicated story you're telling. But sometimes they do these things which are unnecessary to the story and kind of violate what they're omitting other characters for. It's like we talked about in the Bran episode with Locke and the mutineers.
Mutineers. Ugh.
Sir Jorah, your father was killed by mutineers.
I know. Just when you thought they were going to stop using that word, they had to do it. They had to bring it back for season 7. We killed every mutineer. Like, oh, God. Stop with that damn word.
They got to use it in season 8 now.
They just have to. Remember what the mutineers.
But that whole episode to me, and I think I said it, it felt like a side quest. John's not going to die there at Craster's Keep, and he's not going to reach Bran. Like, you know that going into the episode. So the whole thing was just like a waste that didn't really move the story forward. It kept it in a flight pattern for an episode. And you're going to run into situations like that with such a sprawling narrative. But Sansa versus Arya felt like that times 10 because of how many episodes the storyline took with it. It just felt like a waste. That's basically Sansa's story thus far. And before we end, I want to go back to the beginning with Sansa being that, at least in the fandom, that character that some fans can say, well, you don't like her because she's a woman. I don't like Sansa mostly because of her decision-making in the Battle of the Bastards. You hate Sansa, and it goes all the way back to things she did as a child. What things make you most angry about her?
Oh,
and there's a follow-up part. Can you name anything about her character that you either like or any positive takeaways from Sansa?
I'm trying to think of like a I'm trying to think of a scene, something. I can't. I'm at a loss.
Nothing redeemable about her at all.
I just can't think of anything. And I'm sure there is. I mean, I'm sure I'm missing a scene or something. But
all right. So how about this? You know, if somebody says to you, you don't like Sansa because she's a girl. You don't like Sansa. How would you respond to that?
I first tell them that there's plenty of female characters that I love in this story. Some that in the show.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly.
Most, I think, that are not in the show, right?
Yeah. Arya Martell, notwithstanding. Yeah. Definitely withstanding, excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
The reason why I don't like her is not because she's a female. She's not a good person. She betrays her family. She lies. Will do anything to keep her dreams alive that, you know, at the cost of her family. She's just like her mother, how she just takes on how she treats John, like John's a second-rate citizen. Doesn't even think to give the her own father the benefit of the doubt on that.
Mm.
The list can just go on and on, like all little things.
But all those things that you don't like about her, if she was... And you don't like Bran Tully, Rob Tully. You know, both of them have soured in your mind for lesser offenses. But if it was Bran and Sansa, like if Sansa had been crippled and became the Three-Eyed Raven and Bran was in Sansa's place somehow, you'd hate Bran.
Right.
I hate that argument, especially when it comes to fiction. And not even fiction like a real-world drama. Fiction like... set in, you know, with dragons and magic.
Dragons and
like, why are you reading so deep babies into this and making this about, like, society now? Yeah. My like or dislike of a character doesn't have anything, for a woman at least, it's got nothing to do with them taking regency or control of their own life. What else you got, John? Anything you want to say about Sansa?
Not really.
Has there ever been a time where you thought you might dislike Sansa more than you dislike Catelyn?
I think about it sometimes, but she's not as bad as Catelyn. She's a little smarter than Catelyn. Catelyn was just complete. Like, Sansa made some decent smart maneuvers, as you can say, whether you agree with them or not agree with them, but anything that Catelyn did just really turned into shit.
You know, Catelyn should have better prepared Sansa when she initially went to King's Landing. Yeah, I talked about Ned should have communicated what he was thinking in terms of the princes and the princess, how they were not Robert's kids. Maybe he should have told Sansa that. Maybe that would have helped her to see what was really going on. But Catelyn did not do a good job preparing her daughter for what she was walking into at King's Landing. And Catelyn kind of knows what it's like in the South because she was raised in Riverrun. And it's just fun to blame everything on Catelyn. All right. Thanks for listening. Appreciate it. You can find us and like us, facebook.com/thepromisedprinces. Follow us on Twitter @princesspromised. Read the Westerosi Companion, theprincesthatwerepromised.com, Apple Podcasts, the Google Play Store, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Spotify, YouTube. Find The Princes That Were Promised. Subscribe to us. Leave a review. We will speak to you guys next time.
Bum 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 bum